Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Justice Stata presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. This is the date and time set for the matter of Sheriff of Pershing versus Andrews. It is case number 58713. Mr. Shirley, Mr. Cochran, are you ready to proceed?
I am,
yes, sir. Very well.
May it please the court, Jim Shirley, Pershing County District Attorney on behalf of the State of Nevada. I would like to reserve 5 minutes in rebuttal. The district court's decision to declare the language in NRS 212093 unconstitutional should be reversed. Data and oral arguments, I'd like to focus on the two primary issues that the judge relied on, overbreadth and vagueness. This court is faced with
something. Before you go into the constitutional issues, analytically, I'd like you just to address the construction of the statute under ordinary plain vanilla statutory construction rules, and in particular, the fact that another statute seems to specify cell phones as prohibited, suggesting that the legislature, with this list of items that are all tools that could be used to gain exit rather than a device that could help enlist someone else to help you exit, why we shouldn't just say this statute doesn't apply to cell phones and be done with it. That's the issue I want to understand first.
Okay. So you want me to start with construe the statute first?
Yes, please.
What in our brief we talked about you did in the Ford case, and then I'll talk specifically about NRS 212-165.
That would be most helpful to me. Thank you.
when you're construing the statute, you have to start out with who does it apply to. And if we're looking at 212-093, it applies to prisoners. And NRS 208-085 defines a prisoner as anybody in lawful custody or under lawful arrest. Subsection 4 of 212-093 talks about limitations that are placed, and they specifically state that a sheriff can authorize possession of what could be construed as a tool of escape. So this applies to people that are like Mr. Andrews was at the time of the alleged crime, was in a custodial setting in the jail. Now, the next thing you do is you have to go through and define what the elements are. So prisoner who is in lawful confinement other than residential confinement shall not knowingly manufacture, possess, or have in his custody or control any item adapted, designed, or commonly used for the purpose of escape or attempted escape, whether they want to escape or not. So the first thing I think you did in the Ford case was to look at, were there any of the words that designate what kind of criminal intent or mens rea is required under the statute? And NRS 212-093 specifically provides that they shall knowingly possess. Knowingly, according to this court's previous decision and according to statute, is a general intent provision. NRS 193.017 defines knowingly as imports a knowledge of the facts which constitute the act or omission of the crime and does not require a knowledge of its unlawfulness. In Robbie v. State, the court said that terms such as willingly and knowingly connote a general intent crime. And so the next thing you get to is, what do the word commonly used, what does that really mean? And generally when you do your interpretation of a statute, what this court has said is you look at the plain language, and if it's plain language that's easily understood by an ordinary person, there is no ambiguity. And commonly used, we use the term common historically through our nation, and it's a term that's easily understood by anybody. And used, of course, is a verb that we commonly use. in some of your sister states that have dealt with this language in the terms of a burglary statutes, or in the Ninth Circuit, they had a case where it said commonly used in the home. They found that commonly used is a term that is easily understood by an ordinary person, and that there is no ambiguity in the term. And in fact, citing to Hart, State versus Hart, a Kansas case, we cite to these in our brief, State versus McDonald, the court said, we think that even the most stupid member of the household housebreaking cult would understand that such undesirable conduct falls within the prohibition of the statute. Meaning that commonly used frame, even the most stupid people that do the activity would understand. And in a prison setting, what's really interesting about 212093 is subsection 4. Subsection 4 says that the sheriff can authorize in certain instances that the person can possess the tool. So we have work programs by statute. So he can authorize them to have a shovel, or he can authorize them to have a pickaxe, or whatever he needs to do in that context, or any other context if they authorize it. So what that tells us is that a reasonable person reading that would know that if the sheriff hasn't authorized it, I have to start thinking about what I'm possessing. In the context of a burglary statute, we have people going around society that have every right to possess what might be bolt cutters. I have some bolt cutters at home. And what the legislature did in that case was limited to the circumstances where they're actually showing that there was a burglary in process or they were about to commit a burglary. In a prison setting, you don't have the right to have all those tools. It can be limited by the circumstances. So a prisoner should know and should contemplate, an ordinary, reasonable prisoner would contemplate, if I have a cell phone, is that something that I could use to escape? And clearly it could. There are a variety of uses that you could use for escape. The primary is to coordinate with somebody on the outside to pick you up.
What do you do, though, with the difference between a cell phone and all of the items that are specifically enumerated in the statute?
Well, I think the problem with the enumerated parts of the statute, you know the legislature, how they work better than I do, but a lot of times we adapt things from other jurisdictions.
I think that's a fair assumption. But.
Well, but you know what they do. They adapt things from other jurisdictions, and so they pulled a whole bunch of terms together. But in the discussion in the legislative history, they said, we know that we're not going to be able to list everything. And so they have that catch-all in there so that they can you don't have to name everything. And constitutionally speaking, the U.S. Supreme Court, and I believe this court, has recognized that you can't boil down what they're doing to mathematical precision, and there has to be some flexibility there.
The issue that I have is normally a catch-all is perfectly fine, but normally it would carry the qualities of the things that precede it. It would be of like kind. And what I'm trying to get is, how is a cell phone like the enumerated items in the statute?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I think the problem is they couldn't list everything that you could have. For example, in our jail, they have striped uniforms, the old black and white striped uniforms. Well, what if they were to get a deputy's uniform and a badge and everything? Would that be something that they would have for any other reason than escape so they could get out? Yet that wouldn't be covered in the statute. There's a multitude of things that we talk about in the legislative history. One of the incidents they talked about was in Ely, and the prisoner had taken a piece of plastic and made it into a knife and held it at a guard's throat so he could escape. And so they don't name everything. If a gun would be something they could use, and it's not named in there. Traditionally, in the history of this nation, when I was growing up, watching cartoons or some of the funny things, they'd always take the cake in with a file in it. A rasp and a file is not named in the statute. Yet commonly we always thought of a rasp and a file as something they could use to escape. So they couldn't name everything. And it's not just solely manipulating, physically manipulating, but they included a key which would manipulate. But what about a card?
Yeah, I don't want to dominate your time entirely, but could you also comment on the fact that NRS 212-165-3 deals, specifically does refer to a cell phone as a prohibited item in Nevada Department of Corrections setting, and why should we not apply sort of conventional statutory interpretation rules, say, well, legislature knew how to say cell phone when it meant it, and it didn't in this context?
Well, and I think you have to look at the history, one, for 212-165, and you also have to think about the general statute versus the specific. The history of 212-165 was in 2005, a non-correctional officer took a cell phone in and gave it to a prisoner, and that prisoner used that cell phone to escape. So the prison officials, not the sheriffs and chiefs, not anybody else, the prison officials approached the legislature and said, we need to address this in the prison. Now, you recognize that in your case law that you can have, I have 5 minutes left? Okay. You recognize in your case law that you can have general versus specific, and the specific's going to only govern when it's the specific facts. 165 is specific to prisons. And there are several reasons why a prison environment would be different than a jail environment and why you would want to govern it. Sections 1 and 2 are specific to anybody bringing a cell phone into the prison. It distinguishes between a felony level and a misdemeanor level, the misdemeanor being kind of an accident. And so when you're looking at it from that perspective, the legislature, yes, they adopted that in 2007, about 4 years after they adopted the original, but it was specific to prisons. Jails were never mentioned. And jails, if we went to the Old West, a jail was just the jailer and the inmates. In rural counties, it's about that still. You have the jailer and the inmates. A prison, you have social workers, you have educators, you have cooks. It's a small city. You have all the services of a city. And so doing it in a prison and the focus of that legislation wasn't really upon the prisoners. It was upon the people bringing stuff in. The other thing about a prison that you have to be concerned about in a jail with cell phones is not just escape. In a prison, some of the citations we gave you, one of the concerns that they have is they take these cell phones and they continue their criminal enterprise over the cell phone without monitoring. And so it's a specific statute designed for the specifics. You go back to the general, and it still applies to the jail, and it's excluded in 165, but it still applies to the jail. And so under statutory construction, the general statute applies first unless you meet the criteria of the specific statute.
Thanks. Mr. Shirley, you're at two and a little bit over 2.5 minutes.
Pardon me?
You're at about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, I saw that. If I talk about, I think I've construed the statute. In the Hart case that Washington court cited to, it said, the court noted in reference to commonly used language, the defendant calls to attention the general rule that penal statutes must be ascertainable standards, and where a statute either requires or forbids the doing of an act in terms so vague and ambiguous that men of ordinary understanding and common intelligence, there's that word common again, can only guess at its meaning and differ to its application, it lacks the first essential of due process. We are incurred with this principle but fail to see its application to the words commonly used. And really, a lot of the sister states have looked at that commonly used, and and they've said a common person would understand what commonly used means. And we cited to several things in our society that's changing. And when the legislature originally adopted 093, the cell phones were bigger, if you remember back. They were the big flip phones, and they were bigger phones. Today, you can have a cell phone that's teeny. And they have more power today. The prisoners could use a cell phone to download schematics of the prison. They could download all kinds of information that they couldn't previously do. And so the cell phone not only allows them to evade detection through the phone system in communicating with people on the outside, it also allows them to do a multitude of other things. In 2010, this is a good example, in Arizona, John McCluskey and two inmates escaped from the Arizona prison. I think it was one of those ones that were ran by a private company. But they figured out the weaknesses in the system. Then they went to another inmate that had a phone, and they coordinated who would pick them up and take them out. And so, but for that coordination, they would not have made it far out in the Arizona desert to escape. And similar to Nevada, two people ended up dead shortly thereafter. And so this is really serious business that we have institutional security, and the legislature can't predict what's going to happen. And so they put the catch-all in there because they can't tell, you know, 5 years down the road, the technology changes, the way things change. And prisoners have 24 hours a day to think about how they're going to get out. And once they get out, the most important thing is that ride to carry them away from where they were. And I think I'm out of time, so I'll talk to you about it.
Thank you, Mr. Shearer. Mr. Cochran.
Thank you. Morning. I feel that there are three important factors that lead to the conclusion that the district court made the right decision here in dismissing the matter against Mr. Andrews. Those are the statutory construction of the statute in question, the case law in Nevada, as well as the legislative intent. A bare reading of the statute reveals no mention of cellular phones or electronic devices. And we know from a reading of 212, NRS 212-165, that the legislature in Nevada is perfectly capable of including the language to ban cell phones in a correctional setting. The Supreme Court presumes that the legislature, when enacting statutes, is aware of other statutes. That comes out of Moore versus State at 122 Nevada 27. In addition, within Moore versus State is the rule of lenity. And the rule of lenity demands that any ambiguities in a criminal statute be liberally interpreted in the accused's favor. The circumstance here of the statutory construction leaves no aspect of cellular phones. When you look at the categories of what is in actually enumerated within the statute, it talks about things that are used to physically manipulate the confines of a custodial setting. We're talking about bolt cutters. We're talking about wire cutters, keys, pick locks, saws, digging tools, rope, ladder, or hooks. Nothing like that can be seen to be in the same category as a cell phone. In addition, we have the case law. In 1986, Puglisi versus State, it had to deal with what are burglary tools. And there, the state tried prosecuting someone for having a plastic shopping bag. And correctly so, this court said that just goes too far askew of the statutory language. That doesn't provide notice to the person. And to take the state's rationale, if anything falls into this catch-all, that means that shoes are now tools of escape, because it certainly would help to scale a fence or razor wire if you had shoes. If you have corrective lenses or glasses, those are going to help you see, to help you escape better. And certainly a reading of the statute in question reveals nothing that would indicate that these things fall into those specific enumerations. Furthermore, we have the legislative intent. There's no mention of cell phones or electronic devices at any point during the drafting or discussion of this statute. There's simply none. Even when the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General, when they're discussing the impact, the financial impact, there's no discussion of county jails, of county district attorneys, nothing of the like. Simply put, we know that the legislature is perfectly capable of prohibiting cell phones in a custodial setting. They did it. They meet every 2 years. If cell phones have gotten smaller and things have changed since the imposition of the statute, The legislature is perfectly capable of including that language. They meet every 2 years. Furthermore, there's no intent element here. We also know that an intent element in a statute can help clear up any potential vagueness problems, but there's simply no intent here. Much like even in the burglar tool statute, there must be an intent there. There's simply no intent required under this statute. The person need not even possess the item with the intent to escape. So when you couple an evaluation of the statutory language.
Counsel, I'm not sure I follow that argument. The statute imposes as a condition that the prisoner not knowingly manufacture, possess, or have. Doesn't that provide an intent overlay in this statute?
At best, it would be a general intent as opposed to...
You're suggesting there's no intent at all.
Well, there's no intent necessary.
What is the role of the word knowing in this statute, under your view?
Well, you have to rectify it with later in the statute. It indicates whether or not it's going to be used as part of an escape. So the person could know of it, but have no intent whatsoever that be used in the aim of what the statute is there to prevent, which is escapes. So yes, it does have a knowingness at the beginning of the statute, a knowledge element, but there is no element of intent that it actually be used to negate the issue that the statute's there for, is to prevent escapes.
So is your point that there is an intent requirement in so far as the prisoner has to know he has the object, but there's not a specific intent that the prisoner possess that object with the intent of utilizing the object for purposes of escape? I mean, is that what you're saying?
The statute as it reads, that none of the items have to be used for escape. So hypothetically, under the state's rationale, you could charge someone for possessing shoes, even though they're not going to escape.
They would know they had
shoes. They know they have shoes. Those shoes, they have no intent of escaping, but shoes are commonly used to escape from a custodial setting.
Except that they're not tools. I mean, his point is that the cell phone is a tool, just a modern tool, that would facilitate coordination of your departure from your jail.
Under that line of thought, I don't see how you would distinguish a shoe, glasses, anything of the like. Clothing, for that matter, would be a tool for escape.
Certainly, if you were naked, you would be more likely to be picked up.
I think you'd be more likely to be picked up. You'd be more likely to injure yourself escaping. You just wouldn't be as inconspicuous. Ultimately, there are three things, very important things, that weigh in favor. Again, the statutory construction, the case law, and the legislative intent. Furthermore, the words commonly used, there's essentially no history of the statute being used to prosecute someone for such a thing. So it is somewhat of an impossibility that now that the first time it apparently in Nevada that this statute is being used in such a manner, it would defy logic how it could be commonly used if this is the first prosecution for such a thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cochran. Mr. Shirley, I know that you went through all of your time, but Mr. Cochran graciously left a little bit of time on. If you'd like a 1 minute of rebuttal, I would provide you with that opportunity.
Did I go through my 5 minutes rebuttal, too?
You did.
Just real quick, the interesting part of the argument with the shoes, the glasses, those are not prohibited items. We do not have our prisoners running around without shoes, without clothing, without their glasses. And under subsection 4, those are authorized items. When you're looking at subsection 4, the sheriff or the warden or whoever it is can authorize the prisoner to possess certain things. And a toothbrush can be used for escape, but it requires some adaptation, some changes. They'll melt them down and make them into keys. But until that happens, the toothbrush isn't an item used for escape, and it's something that's permissible for them to have until they alter it. With regard to the shoes, I don't know how you alter shoes to make them any different than what they are to run, walk across the surface. So it's a little bit facetious to say that, you know, you could have glasses or shoes or clothing. They're black and white jumpsuits as such.
Thank you, Mr. Shirley. Thank you, Mr. Cochran. This matter will stand submitted.